Good evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2 Tango Tango Tango. And this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. The net is open to amateur radio operators of all license classes, irrespective of their membership in VARA. We would ask that you check in if you're listening, even if you don't have a question or comment, even if you don't feel yourself technically astute or adept. We'd like to know that you're there. It helps us frame our questions and our answers in a more appropriate manner, and will enhance your learning and your enjoyment of the net. So we will hope that you do join us. And let's see. The way this works is we log in with our call sign, our name, and then we indicate whether or not we have a question, a comment, both, or none of the above. We do attempt to check into this net in a somewhat orderly manner. And the way that's done is we do it by call sign group. So we'll be doing that momentarily. Just for your reference, topics that are fair game for this net are pretty much anything. Number one, you have amateur radio, electronics, telecommunications, computers, things in our society that use for those things, and that pretty much leaves you with the opportunity to talk about anything you want. I'm going to adjust my power down here, make sure I'm making it. Yeah, okay. Anyway, so that's pretty much the game plan. So let us begin with this fine game. Stations whose call signs begin with the letter A, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, whether or not you have a question, comment, both, or none of the above, please call K2BAR. AB2XT with a question. Good evening, John. AB2XT, I got you. Very, very fine. I have you noted as having a question. Very good. Any other alpha stations, please call K2BAR. Alrighty. Let's go to our next adventure. Call signs that begin with the letter November. Please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, this is N2OEL. Two questions.
Oh, wow. I already got three questions and only two check-ins. That's excellent. Hi, Noel. Any other Novembers? Okay. Our next call sign group will be whiskeys. Anybody with a whiskey call sign?
W2JEK, Don with a question.
Wow, I got more questions than I do check-ins. This is excellent. Hi, Don. Good evening to you. Very good. Any other whiskeys?
WE2R, Charlie, no questions.
Okay, Charlie, you know, you're starting to make me look bad here. All right, no problem. Good evening. Good to hear you. Any other whiskeys? Okie doke. How about that ever popular Kilo 2 station? Call signs begin with Kilo, immediately followed by the number 2.
K2BAR. This is K2ZO. I've got a question.
Excellent. Good evening, Jim. Good to hear you as well. Marvelous. We're going to have a lively net tonight. I can see this already. Any other Kilo 2s?
This is K2DSL. David, no questions at this time.
David, do we have to have a word about that? No problem. All right. Very good. No problem. Good to hear you. Any other Kilo 2s?
K2AMI, Tony.
No questions, no comments, just listening at this time.
Oh, man. Good evening, Tony. Good to hear you. I have an announcement to make after we're all done checking in before we can dive into the questions. A really cool announcement. Sorts. Any other Kilo 2s? Okay, any other Kilos, any format of Kilo, please call K2BAR. Okay, just so everybody knows, the PL for this repeater is 141.3. I didn't make that clear. The PL is 141.3. If anybody wants to dial that up, that might be a good thing to do. Any other call sign groups, anybody late check-in, et cetera, please call K2BAR. Alrighty, well, we're all here. Well, first of all, I want to thank Noel for jumping on the net last week, taking care of that. I had mentioned I was going to be away, but I never actually got some of the cover. And Noel called me and said, "What's wrong with you? Aren't you running the net?" And I went, "I'm on my way to Illinois." Or was I in Illinois? I think I was in Illinois at that point. Yes, I was. So, yes, that was pretty exciting, to say the least. So, we're in Illinois because KC2NZC, Mr. John, our second son, completed Navy boot camp. He wasn't my star academic person. And he graduated number 2 out of 679 in academics in boot camp. He was also doing very well in a number of other areas, and now he's off to Nuclear Power School in Charleston. So, very, very cool. I was teasing him that when he comes home on leave for Christmas, that I know he'll just want to study for his general or his extra, grin, grin. But we'll work on that. Anyway, it was very, very cool. I had a lot of really cool simplex conversations on 5.2 and miscellaneous other frequencies, but a lot of them on 5.2. And it was a bit of a solar flare on the way back, so we didn't have great HF on the way back, but we did listen a lot on the way out, although my antennas were a little restricted, but on the band, so I had no chance to really do the full installation, but we're getting there. Things are slowly crawling back to life in the band, too. So, with that in mind, let's get to John's question first. AB2XT, your question, sir, K2BAR.
K2BAR, this is John, AB2XT. I had a question for a couple of weeks ago. You were mentioned something about fans, like, you know, the computer fans that you take out and use for the equipment. And you were suggesting that you run the fan, like a 12-volt fan, run it at 6 volts to improve efficiency. And, I noted that, but I'd like to get into that a little bit more, exactly how that works. It's the basic idea to run whatever fan it is you have at half the rated voltage and why the improved efficiency. I'm imagining you're still losing a certain amount of CFM, but if you could just go over that a little bit, clear me up a little bit, thanks.
Well, sure. I mean, there are a couple of things to think about, and plus and minus. One is, a lot of people run a high-performance fan at a reduced voltage, primarily for noise, more than anything. That's one thing to consider. There is some school of thought that says if you're not careful in how you do cooling, that you can cause other problems with a radio or transmitter. That is, if you're cooling the wrong spot, that you could end up not having the foldback on power that you'd expect. So let's say if you can keep one part of a heat sink cool where the sensor is, but the device itself is still not getting any cooler than whatever protection that you know, thermal sensing or thermal sensor is providing, could end up, you know, basically being confused and not cause the, let's say, the voltage or current going into a transistor to be curtailed, and therefore you could end up with a situation where you put undue stress on the transistors or other amplifier components. So I mean that can happen. In most of our cases, though, that's not really that much of an issue. You know, you're probably just fine with transmitting at full power and with a fan that's cooling the whole heat sink complex pretty evenly. I think you'll be fine. Anybody have any anecdotes or views of their own on this one, please call K2BAR.
K20.
How did I know? Go ahead, Jim.
Are you talking about the running a DC fan on half voltage?
Yeah.
What I thought the story was, it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was an incidental thing that came through in a broader discussion. But yeah, it would be like a 12 volt DC fan, and the suggestion that I thought I heard was to run it at 6 volts for better efficiency.
I don't know whether it'll be more efficient, but one of the problems that you have when you take, whether it's AC or DC, when you take a fan like that and try to run it at a lower voltage, is you have to be careful that it may not start. I've found that some fans, and they'll run. Once you get them going, they'll run. You know, you may have to move it with your finger to get it going, but you don't want to do that. So sometimes what you may want to do is to drop the voltage down, but not all the way to half. You can put some series diodes, drop it down to like 9 volts. The interesting thing is moving the voltage down only a small amount makes a big change in the sound of the air moving through. You know, if you put a variac on it and move it down, you'll see that at 9 volts, a fan that is annoying at 12 volts will be perfect at 9 volts. But make the test first. Make sure that it will start, because some of them won't.
And I'd run multiple times.
Maybe 2XT. Okay, I understand. So the idea would be to do some experiments, back it off a little bit, and the primary thing you're going to get is peace of mind from the thing not being annoying. That's basically it.
Well, peace of mind in two dimensions. One is that you're not driven crazy by the annoyance of the sound, and B, you're getting the benefit of some moving air across the devices you wish to keep cooler, which is a good thing as well. So, anyway, that's the upshot of the thing. Anybody else want to comment?
Julia?
Go ahead.
I think most of the common computer fans have some electronics in it. They seem to start very nicely. I often put two together in series. Of course, when you do that, because sometimes they not take the current, you really have to put a small capacitor across them, you know, small electrolytic, just to even out the current through. And I don't think that they take it as a pure DC. I think they somehow convert it to an AC. And if you have two fans in series that are trying to do that, one peak will say to it, another one strut, and it doesn't get too happy. But when I put a small electrolytic across both of them, I've had good success.
Okay, so you're thinking about putting a small capacitor across the AC-DC terminal?
Well, the fans I'm talking about are strictly DC, and I use them in a most interesting application. I wear them out regularly. I have a furnace room in my house. The furnace room used to get, 110 degrees or something. Well, when we modified the door, we put a couple more vents at the bottom, and you still don't get enough thermal sight vision. Here's the furnace room heating up to a very warm temperature and heating up the outside wall where my heat goes away. But I really would like to have the heat in the kitchen. So, starting when the days start getting chilly and we start running the furnace more than, right now it's nothing. We don't run the air conditioner or the furnace. But pretty soon we'll start running the furnace. And at that time, I plug in the DC supply and start running a couple of four fans, series parallel, two and two. And one other thing I'd like to do is put one or two fans with diodes up there, the light emitting time, so I can tell when the darn thing's on. And never again will I use the red one so the wife doesn't freak out thinking the furnace room's on fire. I now use blue or green diodes. And the two fans that are in series, of course, have to be identical. I've never had a problem with them starting.
Okay. Interesting. Anybody else?
BQSD.
Go ahead.
Noel, on that one, interesting. Are you running the fans, are they 12-volt fans, and are you running them off of rectified, of the 24-volt transformer down there in the room? Why are they parallel, series, not parallel?
So they don't make so much noise. I'm running them off of, wall wart. I suspect it's for my wife's heating fan, because it's rated at 1 amp. Those things that you sit out on, you put in a chair, it vibrates your back, whatever, that one. Anyways, it's, rated at 1,000 milliamps, supposedly 12 volts, but of course it's running 14, 15 volts, whatever. But that's what I've been using, and the noise was objectionable. So I just have it on, they turn, they're nice, not really fast, there's not a lot of air movement, but it's enough to faster than the thermal cycling would to keep the furnace room reasonably cool.
So why do you go through a number of them?
Because I run them continuously for 6 or 7 months. And I don't bother buying the ones with the expensive ball bearings. I use the sleeve bearings. And eventually what will happen is they stop moving. And in the past I took a couple apart and tried to put a little liquid wrench or whatever and saw that they were really interesting. They have a transistor sometimes. Other things inside, and they seem to be a permanent magnet motor. I really think they're running an oscillator in there, but eventually they just stop moving. I think the bearings just start seizing up. Maybe one day I'll go out and invest in ball bearing fans instead of buying the ones at the Hamfest 3 for a dollar.
Do you mount them vertically or horizontally?
You're mounted in the door itself. There's a panel in the top of the door. The door is whatever normal door is, 3/4. And I have a panel on the inside, panel on the outside. And I took the fans, glued them to a piece of cardboard, holes cut where the fan goes, and stuck that in between the two door panels, so that this way it comes from the inside and blows to the outside, and then of course there's a vent down at the bottom that takes it in. So they are vertically.
Okay, so that's an application you just mentioned of lowering the voltage, and I'm going to still take Jim's advice that you pick a particular fan off of, take a salvage one. You can do the experiment, of course, to see how it runs. I was wondering, it probably wouldn't be too hard to make a kickstart circuit to get something to start at 12 volts and taper it off within 30 seconds to the final voltage. Does that sound like that would work?
Did you want to answer that, Noah?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear him. in fact, I have my hearing aid still upside down. Should go to FM. Wait a minute. There, back to FM. And the wife just came in looking for the dog dish and disturbed me while I didn't hear him.
It just doesn't sound right. You know that? Now, I won't tell Nancy you used the phrase the wife, but okay. You'll live to fight another day.
Next way, and dog came in looking for the dog dish. We have this unusual situation in the house where the dog, one of the dogs gets her voice stolen from the other dog. One dog is, the new dog is a predator, but the old dog, the previous existing dog here, and the cat get along very well. So they both go into the ham shack with me, if I'm here. They eat their dinners and breakfasts in peace. There's a one-way door so they can get out, but the little monster, 13 pounds of hungry, ravenous dog, can't get in. And the hungry, ravenous monster picks up the other dog's dish, takes it to the couch as a toy. And so I suspect that's where the dog dish went.
I gotcha. Very nice. Okie doke. Very, very nice. So at least we've established what that's about. Now that we've done that, can we, I think we should probably go back to the task at hand, as they say. So, alrighty. Any more on this topic? Okay, very good. Thank you, Noelle. That was a good colloquy. And thank you, John, for your question. Made it very lively. Alrighty. Are there any other check-ins before we move on? This is K2BAR. Alrighty. So, Mr. John, what is your question?
K2BAR and NFW2JDK. Good evening, everybody. A friend of mine the other day gave me an old radio receiver, a McKay Radio Model 128AX. And this is a marine radio receiver, has four bands, goes from 660 kilocycles or kilohertz, if you want to call it that, all the way down to 15,000 kilocycles to kilohertz, just about the limit of where you can go with the radio waves. And these apparently were used on shipboard. And it's a regenerative receiver, very well made, for professional use, and has about five tubes in the thing, plus a power supply with a tube and a voltage regulator. And I'm just curious if anybody perchance knew how to get a hold of a schematic for the thing. Seems to work like a charm, needs a dose of contact cleaner, but other than that, it seems to be functioning pretty well. So that's what I'm looking for. Back to that, W2JEK.
Don, what was it? It was a McKay radio. What was the model? 128 what?
AX. You may find an AW on the internet.
There's no prefix. It's 128 Alpha X-ray?
That's a roger.
Well, you're right, top 128 AX. So there's stuff on radiobanter.com and a few other things. So what did you want to know about it?
Basically looking for a schematic and a block diagram even. Probably a schematic would be a good thing to have for this thing. Although it's working, I don't have any problem with it, but it's really good to have one if somebody is one readily available. Let's put it that way. I don't know if anybody in the club is into the loafer thing, but would possibly have had one of these.
Yeah, well, I see someone on Radio Banter put the same question up, and that was, let's see, when was that? That was back in 03, and there were no posted responses, so that's probably not good. Do you know who might know? If you can track down K2LRE. He probably can help you. He used to work for Mackie, as it's called. We call it McKay, but he called it Mackie. That was the way that apparently the company is referred to by its employees and customers. And you might check with Mike on that one. That would be one suggestion. Anybody else? Okay. Well, the other thing is put something out on boat anchors, on the boat anchors list. Are you familiar with that list?
Sort of familiar with that thing. Might have to play around with that a little bit. I have a friend out in, I have a couple of friends at Lindau, Pennsylvania, and another fellow up in New Hampshire might also know about this, so but I'm just starting here. Back to that, W2JK.
Yeah, sounds marvelous. It really does. It sounds like a nice little receiver, and got a power supply so that it'll run shipboard or at home, as it were. Marvelous. Alrighty. Let's move on then. K2ZO, your question, sir. K2BAR.
Okay, K2BAR. This is K2ZO. Alrighty. Yeah, I have a question about a solid-state amplifier. But I have one other comment here about Noel's talking about the dog dish. Reminded me of a story. This fellow's having dinner at his neighbor's house, and he's sitting there eating, and he says to the fellow, he said, "Why is your dog watching me like that?" And the neighbor says, and the guy says to him, "Well," he says, "I don't know. Perhaps it's because you're eating out of his dish."
Oh, man. Go ahead, Jim.
Anyway, has anybody fooled around with an ALS 600? That's an Ameritron solid-state amplifier. Scratching my head over this one. It looks like somebody's turned a few of the pots. This thing uses a number of, four of them, MRF 150s. As I guess you're probably aware, they're FETs, power FETs. And each one of them has a separate bias adjustment. In doing a quickie check, I see the bias adjustments are very different for each one. The instruction manual has no information on how to do that. What I assume you have to do is to measure the current going to that device and adjust the voltage on the gate. But has anybody got any idea of what that should be for an MRF 150? Back to that.
Well, you got me stumped. So you, I'm sorry, Jim, I was interrupted by a phone call, but you want to know the current voltage for an MRF, or the bias voltage for an MRF 150?
Well, either that or just kind of some general ideas to how to set it. Apparently these things are running, you know, AB2 or something. I don't know what, you know, class they're really running, but it looks like, you know, each one of them has an individual bias adjustment. So what I would assume you have to do is measure the current on each individual one. There's a series resistor where you probably could do that, but no other information. And I'm just hoping that someone here may have at some point in time had their hands on one of these things.
No, I have not had my hands on one in a while, if ever, if I remember. Oh, yes, I have my hands on one of these. I'm looking now. The number looked, sounded familiar. I'm looking at the data sheet. And what is this thing in?
This is in a an Ameritron AL600. And, of course, it's got a couple of them. four of them to be exact, two and two into a combiner. And this is a tough, well, schematic to figure out. There's some information that's not here. And I'm scratching my head over this one. These doggone transistors. Tubes are so much easier.
Yeah, you're less likely to be killed by... But this is an AL600... Or is it ALS or ALL? AL600, I'm trying to remember now. The Ameritron.
It's an ALS600.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if there's a... If there's a manual out there for this puppy. Well, just thinking about it in general, it's going to be 2x2. How are you going to balance it out? And what I would do is I would look to very carefully balance the amount of, or the voltage being applied to each. In the schematic, where is the, you said each device has its own bias adjustment. So if that's true, what would we, let's see, if that's true, I guess you'd be looking at possibly looking at the voltage on the device itself, or there's no way to break it in and look at the current. That's kind of what I'm thinking at this point, that you might want to try to I'd like to see the circuit, but basically you want to make the adjustments so that they're roughly, you know, have the same set voltage. It's not so much on the pot that you're adjusting, but on some other point in the device that suggests the output. Because you want to keep the two in balance. I think that's the key point here, right? Especially for an AB1.
Oh, that's what I assume they do. And as you know, it's probably a neat idea what they did with the four separate pots, because now you don't need to have balanced devices, you know, matched, I should say. And of course, the drain is grounded. There's 50 volts on the source. And of course, and the gate is what we're talking about here. And there's a resistive network there where they're driven. And there's voltage there, and there's a pot to adjust it. The voltage on some of these things seems to be all over the place. What I think happened is somebody put a screwdriver on the pots and started tweaking them. So what I'm trying to figure out is where's the starting point. I did download from DK Mods the manual, but I haven't found the service manual yet. So there you go. All right, I just thought perhaps somebody had their hands on one of these things and fooled around with it. But as I say, tubes are easier.
Let me ask this question. On a schematic, what does it show as a good pickoff point on the output for, you know, each device, such that you could perhaps balance it out? There's no nice way to measure current on a per-device basis, but there's probably a way to measure voltage at some point. And as you tweak it, you're right, it's rather clever. They don't need matched devices because they put a pot on each one. But there's got to be some place where you can see if the output of each one is in equilibrium with its peer in the pair. And then after that, you can worry about the combiner. My guess is you'd probably go through two cycles of this just to be sure. The first pass through each pair will be somewhat coarse, and the second one will be either negligible or nothing. That would be my guess.
Well, it appears to have some kind of an isolator circuit, multi-turn transformer, to kind of balance the signal to the, well, output. I guess this is a combiner I'm looking at right now. From the, there's a pair in push-pull and another pair in push-pull. And they go into a combiner and then into a final matching transformer. So it's not that easy. There's a lot of compensating capacitors across it and stuff like that. But the bias is set up with a resistor divider network on each individual FET so that you can adjust the bias on there. And, of course, there's some series resistors in there. And, of course, the drive comes in on that same point. So, interesting circuit. Still scratching my head over it. As I said, tubes are a lot easier.
Would it be possible to look at that input as a, you know, basically as you make the adjustments, is there a spot on the input where you can see how much current things sucked in at that point on the drive side, and that you equalize the drive to each device? With, I mean, that's a bit of a reach, but the theory is they'll have uniform gain, ha ha. But is there a spot on there where you can pick off a peer point on each transistor, either on the input side or the output side, other than that directly at the pot?
Oh, it doesn't appear to. Basically, what I'm looking at is the voltage coming in, and there is no series resistor going over to the FET, and of course the drain is just grounded. So that's an interesting circuit. I wonder how they do this. They've obviously got some way to do it. Perhaps they just look at the voltage on this thing. I don't know. It's got me confused. But well, I guess the answer is that there really is no information published. That Ameritron has not been the greatest company as far as giving information out. So I don't think there's a service manual out there for this thing, but I guess we can always look around and find out. Anyway, I just thought perhaps somebody would have some experience setting up an MRF-150. Interesting little device here. And, you know, these things put out a lot of RF. Back to that, K2ZO.
Can I get you a second, John? I'm just wondering, is there, there's no voltage output point, to read on each of the transistors?
Well, if you take a look at it, they're fed together, you know, so you're not seeing anything different. That's what's confusing me. You know, if you've got both of the sources, you know, connected together on these FETs, you're not going to see any real difference on it. So, I don't know. If you want to go, you know, if you go to DK Mods, you can download this this thing and take a look at the schematic. It is kind of interesting, and I guess I really I'm scratching my head over here to try to figure out how this thing works.
Yeah, you got me scratching my head. John, go ahead.
I don't know if this is a thank you. Do you have any data sheets on the thing? I have a photo of the on the MRF-150 gauge test circuit. It's a single device test circuit, but it sounds a lot like what you're describing there. There are two resistors, bias and gate, and they're both on the order of 51 ohms. So I'm wondering if your adjustments are also called potentiometers. I don't know if it's too much help, but I guess you can get the data sheets off of the internet pretty simply. And there's a couple of test circuits in there. I don't know if they'll be of any help, but they are in the data sheet.
I can find stuff like that, and I guess the answer is the way these things are in here, it's not easy to test them in the circuit that they're at. If you had the individual device, you could probably hook up something and easily kind of test it as to what you needed to get the proper drain current, you know, to get the get it into the point where it's linear. But the fact that they're soldered into the circuit here, and there's bridging coils and transformers that, you know, kind of connect everything together, makes it very difficult to kind of isolate one of the devices for checking. That's the problem with this. But yeah, there's some low voltage resistors, value resistors in the I keep saying grid in the gate, and a 12 volt bias supply to adjust this. But it's still confusing me. Oh well, I tried. Back to that. This is K2ZO.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you can't find anything from Ameritron, you know, looking at the test circuits might be a good idea, a really good idea. The bias adjustments are on the drains? They're on the gate?
Yes, they are. It's the drain is grounded.
Okay. So this thing is basically looking like a grounded anode amplifier, is that right?
And it's looking like a big triode.
Yeah, it certainly is. With four-part harmony. Okay. God. All right, anybody else have a comment on this one?
This is AB2XG. I just wanted to mention the data sheet shows the same 0 to 12 volt bias adjustment. Seems to be the standard pattern for this design.
Okay, well, that's what they're using here.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess we'll go on. All righty. Well, Jim, thank you for that. That's going to be a conversation piece for a while, I think. And well worth it, too, by the way. So, anyway, beautiful thing. Good topic. MRF-150 is such a wonderful transistor. It's good for all sorts of good things. Alrighty. On that note, let's go to, I believe, Noel. I'm going to take more check-ins, but then I'm going to go to Noel. So, are there any other check-ins for the net tonight? Please call K2BAR. Alrighty, Mr. Noel, your question number one, K2BAR.
Well, I got a couple comments and a couple questions. Comment number one. There's a making strides to get breast cancer walk every year in Central Park. And my scooter with the pair of 33 amp hour 12 volt batteries that we bought last year, they're steel lead acids. Last year it barely made it between the driving from the parking lot, approached a mile over to the park, and across the park, the starting point, and then the 5 mile circuit, and then back. The thing was, the voltage was, 23 volts maybe. Anyways, this year I decided to do a little better. I have some scooter batteries that were new in 1998. They still have 12.79 volts on them. They're faster than ones you used as a, I believe, operation radio at one of the Scout Camp jamborees. Anyway, took the best two, charged them up. Tony K2MI and I went over to his house. He helped me make a circuit, and I put each battery in parallel with an existing battery. So now I had a series parallel circuit. I went around the whole park. Now remember, these batteries are really old, but by the fact that I used much less peak current from each set of battery, I'm able to get more amp hours out of it. And I had all sorts of juice left, and we actually had to drive farther this time. That's the comment.
Help me out here. You took the old batteries and put them in parallel with the current batteries. So, but they're normally wired in the normal batteries are normally two 12-volt batteries in series. Is that your point?
Yes. Each set of 12-volt batteries was
paralyzed by one of the old ones, and I didn't hook them up till just as we pulled out of the parking garage so that the new batteries would not discharge into the old battery. There's a 30-amp circuit breaker, so we know, and normal operation, it draws 15 to 20 amps more if you're going up a steep hill, less if you're posting. So I wasn't worried during the operation of one battery discharging into the other. But just by the fact that I had two batteries, I know that amp hours do go up if you draw less maximum current. And since the current was probably much less, because we believe the things looked like they were just freshly discharged when we got back to the parking garage. So my comment was, it was just an amazing, I bet that could have done another 10 miles.
Well, okay, but understand something, that when you're, once you connect up the auxiliary pair of batteries, you are in fact, you know, loading up, you know, the old batteries with current from the new one. So it's not an entirely free lunch. It's not like four batteries of common vintage and characteristics being put in series parallel. It's more of a, you know, old meets new and kind of helps each other out, but at a cost. So you do understand that, right?
Which is why I didn't hook them up until we got there and we were ready to start. I was drawing juice.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that makes good sense. Anybody have any other comments about this? I've made my piece. Okay. Well, I mean, I have similar issues with batteries that are being used, you know, to support 100-watt radios. You have to be careful to pick things of reasonably common vintage, et cetera. By the way, Devils are up 3-0 with about 3 or 4 minutes left. Not bad. Alrighty. And they play Montreal. Anyway, anybody else have any last comments on this one before we get to our questions? Okie dokie, let's do it. Who's next? It's you, Noel. So what's the question?
Okay. Does anybody here have enough expertise in Excel? Assuming that you were to take the nice net, put it into a simple table, and you had 50 more like that, does anybody here have enough expertise that they could collect it and give me a total at the bottom of the person's call and how many times they checked into the net?
Well, okay, depending on how you have it logged, you could make a pivot table. So every time a call sign appears on a set of rosters, you want to count for how many times that call sign appears across all nets on this one spreadsheet?
No. If I have I have it right now in Word, and I neglected to send it in to Mr. Javits, and we know how Mr. Javits can be irritated, I should say, if someone were to submit it, say, a week before, he has to produce the totals for the Vera meeting on November 1st. So anyways, don't want that to happen. So what I'd like to do, I guess it's November 6th, 7th. I'd like to hand them the total. Does anybody have enough expertise to do that easily? Spend more than 10 minutes on the project.
Hey, Noel, it's David. Just send it to me, email on QRZ.
Together?
I have no idea, but two people doubled.
Good deal.
Oh, thank you, David. That saved me from getting into trouble. Next question. I should say this is a comment. I haven't gotten to the question. Divergent mobile hotspot. It costs about $150, I think, and you spend either $10 for a gigabyte of data transfer that's good for whatever it takes to use it up, a month at the most, or you can spend $40 and get an unlimited data transfer. I bought one for us to take on our mobile home, and we're taking off 17 days, starting the 29th of this month, coming back at the 14th. Anybody have any comments, questions? And I have tomorrow off if anybody wants to play with it.
I have a steroidal version of that, but on AT&T. So just kind of curious, what is, who's going to support the Virgin Mobile box outside of this area?
Sprint.
Where you'll be traveling?
Wife decided she'd like to go to Georgia. Well, it's a little bit warmer, and she wants to start walking the Appalachian Trail this way.
That's fine. That's a beautiful thing. You didn't answer my question. Did you look at the Sprint coverage in the areas you're going to be in?
Yeah, it's good enough. For one thing, most of the time, we'll go from one place to another. We're going to park in the Walmart. They used to have good Sprint coverage. Any of the big cities have decent Sprint coverage. Used to be when we drove upstate, the only place that had Sprint coverage was, believe it or not, Binghamton. Pretty much forget about every place else. We were in roving territory. Now it's got pretty decent coverage, so they've been expanding. And so have decent coverage in most of the areas according to the map on the hard to test to the individual areas, but it looks decent.
Okay, well, the MiFi hotspot is a good thing. I mean, they're real popular. There are a couple of different, versions of that. Good for you. I use one that's a little more powerful. In that, I have a separate cell phone card that is probably about AT&T's best cell data card. The Lightning, and that's a Sierra wireless device, and then I plug that through a USB port into a the Cradlepoint MBR 1000, which has got, I think, three Wi-Fi antennas for diversity reception.
Sorry, that was an error.
Yeah, there are a couple of options there, but for basic access like you're trying to do, it'll be fine. You may consider seeing what the external antenna port capabilities are on the cell side and consider putting up a cell antenna on your vehicle before you go. That'd be one thing to consider that comes to mind. Over.
Okay. Well, I can bring it over to your house. You can look at it.
Now, I'm trying to think when you're going to be able to do it, and you'll find me here, is the question.
I have up tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday.
Well, Saturday during the midday is probably okay. I won't be home. I'll be at St. John's where we have the pancake breakfast car washes and things like that. In fact, we're having a tricky tray on Saturday night, so if your wives do tricky trays, otherwise known as Chinese auctions, please consider being with us on Saturday evening. It would be just lovely to see you there. It's a fundraiser for scouting in our community, and a good time will be had by all. I think we're over 350, maybe 400 gifts now, baskets, so it's truly amazing. So anybody want more information about that, I'll stay on after the net. Any more on this topic of MiFi, Wi-Fi, hotspots, cellular facilitated? Anybody have any more on that, please call K2B Air.
K2DSL.
Yeah, Dave.
I don't think the Virgin Mobile MiFi has any external support. I think it's just what's there. I don't think, and I'm trying to quick scan through the manual, I don't think there is a external antenna port that could pull in the cellular signal any better than what you've got out of the box, but I could be wrong. Anyway, they've actually beefed up the network a little bit because it got extremely popular for the $40 unlimited, and things were a little slow. Looking at the coverage area, it looks like at least when you're going to be on the major highways, you might have good coverage while you're traveling, which probably isn't good for you, but might be good for somebody else in the vehicle. And you can definitely look on the map and see if it's got coverage where you are. And it'll go from Virgin Mobile to Sprint. And Sprint's network is better than Virgin Mobile's network anyway. But I don't know a tremendous amount about it. But beyond that, K2BAR, K2DSL.
Does Virgin Mobile actually operate a network here in the States? I didn't think they did. I thought they were just a reseller of Sprint.
They, as far as I know, they run on top of it. So depending on where you are, you might see that you're actually on Virgin Mobile's network when you look at, like, your IP address and your host information, and sometimes you'll show up to Sprint.
Gotcha. Okay. So they've got some sort of cooperative arrangement and sharing spectrum, as it were. Very nice. All righty. Any more on this?
No, but I'm ready for my two questions.
Oh, well, we're not going to get to your second question quite yet, but I have a comment. Just wanted to give everybody else an opportunity. What I've done online, if I know whether I'm dealing with, 850 versus 1900 meg frequency, and a good portion of them are 1900, what I do is I will take the appropriate antenna and pigtail on the 3G side and point it, if I can, directly at the network cell site that I want to use. And so it doesn't take long to figure out where it is, how to reach it. And then what I do is put the whole thing, if I can, into a fairly high spot, and just feed the whole thing with 12 volts. So what I'm thinking is, you might find that your hotspot, your MiFi toy, works better when mounted outside your vehicle or placed outside your vehicle. I know it's got internal batteries if it's the little one that has no external power capability, or antenna capabilities, I should say. You might want to just throw it up there and just get it outside to improve the characteristics, over.
Yes, I have a 4-amp-hour 12-volt battery. I have a plug-in device that reduces 12 volts to 5 USB, which is how this thing is powered. And I could easily put the whole thing in a plastic bag and put it on top of the motorhome or up a tree if I had to. Probably run for a couple days for 12 volt 4-amp-hour battery.
Well, I'm not so sure of that, but it would certainly run pretty well. What you may want to do is get something like a Tupperware, a Rubbermaid container, not a bag, but pretty cool, very cool. You're on the track for the right answer. We'll just say that you won't be suffering with that configuration. Anybody else? Alrighty. Thank you very much, Mr. Noel. What's your next question? K2BAR.
Okay. I hold in my hand a 150-ohm non-conductive resistor that I've had floating around for years. It's rated at 120 watts. I hate to get hit in the head with this thing. It's a cylinder, about 8 or 10 inches long, fairly hefty, very smooth, marked Sprock. 150 ohms, 20 watts. I went on eBay, tried to get a couple 100 ohm ones. The supposedly non-inductive resistor. They're marked white CK, but they really, really, I swear, look like they got coils in it.